Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
a weird Pacific island that I've discovered and a really fantastic new molecule. So this is a combination of some curious science facts. So I'll start by describing a Pacific island, which I've found just by looking at the globe. It suddenly caught my eye. I thought, wow, what the heck is this? And there's also a molecule, which I'll give a molecular tour of. And what I'm trying out at this stage is I'm doing my cardiac rehab, but to increase the amount of work that I'm doing, I'm walking with a 3 kilo weight, one in both arms, around the sleepy streets of Glenbrook. And to do this, I've actually had to actually hook up my podcast dictaphone, actually just hang around my neck and see how it goes. So I don't know what the quality of this will be. So that's the general aim of things. So I've got to pushing all the time, sort of breathing things, pushing my cognitive thing, the highest capacities I can go, or doing 12, 20 little typing tests a day, not really improving, probably might improve one word a day at max, definitely nothing more than that, and just going over, still going forward, going backwards, and just really pushing it all the time. So I looked at the globe and was just getting my bearings in terms of distances, and I was trying to measure the distance from the southern tip of Australia in Hobart to the start of Antarctica to get some sort of distance, feeling of the distance of the Great Southern Ocean as compared, which is a huge circular ocean. So it is a big ocean, it goes right around the Earth uninterrupted, so it gets some huge storms in it. Fantastic little ocean. That is a really interesting one in terms of it's got some currents and some waves going in it. These massive, massive waves, 20 meter waves slam into the west coast of Tasmania. It's pretty amazing. Amazing ocean down there. But to try and get the sense of the distance. And it's really, the distance from the Shetlands down to, Sicily. That's the distance from Hobart to the edge. That gives you that sort of distance. That's the length of the, distance to the ocean. But it's a smaller distance than the, Atlantic Ocean, and of course the Pacific Ocean is absolutely massive, and I was just looking at it and seeing is there an angle from Earth where you just see complete ocean, you know, that's possible, and there is something over the Pacific where you'd just only see just a little bit of a land mass, obviously at the South Pole, but most of the Pacific is a pretty big ocean. And I looked in the centre of it, looking at various islands, Pitcairn Islands, trying to work out where the US islands were, Micronesia, and sort of, I suppose the aggressive grabbing of this Pacific Ocean by the United States, for all the Micronesia, Guam, all these things, and obviously Hawaii, they got to join the United States. I think, yeah, Hawaii just joined the United States before World War II. It's a pretty interesting thing to look at. I was looking at it and I saw this island called Vostok. You know, you've got all these Cook Islands, Sandwich Islands, Friendly Islands, Tonga, Fiji, and Vostok. I looked it up and small island talk to you. It's roughly a triangular shaped island going to 80 metres up or 60 metres up in the centre. What's it, 60 metres? 60 metres is up. And that's small. It's a fairly reasonably high rise. I think it's triangular shape. There's about 30 metres of beach, and it is there, an island, and it's an uninhabited island in the Federation of Kiribati. It was claimed by the United States. Why? They just did. They said, we claim this island. And when Kiribati was formed, they said, yeah, you can have it. That's right, the Knights of the United States giving this uninhabited island. And so this island is seen by cruise ships. Occasionally, yachters go onto it and scientists go onto it, but it's got no harbour. Little dot there, and it's called Vostok. Now, why is it called Vostok? Well, Vostok is Russian for east. Vladivostok is, I suppose, something to do with east. And it was seen by a Russian explorer, first time in 1820, which means it would be one of the last undiscovered islands in the Pacific, I think. And it wasn't the island, it was east. His ship was called Vostok, so he named it after his ship. And subsequently it's been had a few other names, but that's the one that is on our globe, and it's the one that's indicated. And so I've looked at it and I thought, oh, can I get a satellite image? No, you can't. You click on under Google Maps, it's just not there. So that's a worthwhile place. So it's rather unusual. So there's a few islands I like looking at. There's islands, sort of like little rocky outcrop islands on the sunken continental shelf of New Zealand, right on the very edge. These fantastic little islands I'd love to go and visit. And Vostok is sort of a much sort of nicer looking island. It's probably not tall enough to get any rain. So this is one of the things, if you go into Tahiti, you can see where Tahiti is, because it's got clouds above it all the time. This wouldn't be tall enough to get any clouds forming above it, any rain. And indeed, it's got no fresh water. And there's this phenomena, even on these small lagoons, that you can sometimes find fresh water because it rains, and the fresh water is lighter than the salt water, so it doesn't mix in. If there's just gravel there, the rain will stay there, just even though it's, if it's no sort of tidal effects, if the water is there, you can just normally find some fresh water, but there's apparently no fresh water. And it's a kilometre or so across, so it's a fair size of thing. And I thought, there's actually no features in it, sort of little rise. And I can't remember whether it's 60 metres or 6 metres, but I think it is 60 metres, so that's a reasonably sized hill in a sense. So it's just a hill sitting out of the sea, and there's coral reefs around it, sunken reefs around it. So it's pretty hard to actually get ship into it. Now, it had something called Pisonia trees, and I thought, oh, I'll have to look about Pisonia trees, P-I-S-O-N-I-A trees. And I thought, let's have a look about this. I'll just talk about those trees before I get back into looking at this new fantastic molecule I've found. So the trees are called Pisonia trees, and they're called bird killer trees. Now, that's a pretty amazing type of tree to look at. So this is just hunting down this sort of rabbit hole of information. So Pisonia trees, how do they kill birds? Well, to get their seeds from one island to the other in the Pacific, they've developed a fairly complex seed which has got glue on the outside and hooks. And when a bird brushes past it, the seed adheres to it. And the bird flies from one island to the other and disembarks the seed there. So it's got these unusually big, heavy, sticky seeds. Now, if a bird is not cautious and bumps into too many seeds, it will become weighed down with seeds and not be able to take off again. Particularly if it's one of the fledgling birds which are learning to fly, so it's not on the beach and it goes down, and these seeds have dropped down, the older seeds have dropped down, and so these birds just become entangled in these seeds and die. Now, there's been some research into it, but this is pretty amazing. I see a tree which is deadly for birds. You can imagine a plantation, one of these islands with the, oh, there's trees, let's go walking in it. But I suppose it wouldn't be, it'd be insects, not much but bird life there. You can imagine it stink with all these dead birds, yeah? And it wouldn't be a very pleasant jungle to go through. You wouldn't go through. So a lot of the Pacific Islands have these Pisonia trees, you know? But this island has got a large quantity of it because it's the only thing that grows there. So that's a sort of I suppose an interesting thing. So it's, for me, it's interesting to track down. Now, I'm sort of getting used to the fact that as I go through, acquire facts and structure them, that when I go back and speak to people, they say, no, that's not true. There's no island in the Pacific called Vostok. These series of curious things that Mecca is 180 degrees on the Earth's surface in all directions away from Pitcairn Island. So if you're a Muslim in Pitcairn Island, you could put your prayer mat in any direction you so choose, and you would still be facing Mecca. Now, I think that's these sort of curious side effects are quite interesting because they contain the facts with them, but also contain on them other information. These are geometric bits of information which allow you to really think and work what's going on. And it's pretty interesting that the way that we teach this information, people just don't hook it together, this accepted thing. And just recently I've had people sort of coming out of the woodworks and saying, you know, this stuff, that's a sign that you're not switched on, you've claimed this, and that's obviously not true. And so what I'm doing is listening to it, then going back and researching it, and photographing it, or getting an article up, but just getting you at the moment blue tack and putting a little picture up on the toilet wall, so if they come and visit, they can ask. People may poo-poo rather than do it, so I might discuss a few of those later on. I've been around the park, I might do two sessions of the park, and hopefully this is a good podcast. Hopefully it's probably a better podcast, because the actual podcast thing is further away. I'm walking a reasonable pace with these two weights, and I've got plenty of time. Just get build up the effort with these 3 kilogram weights. Okay, so as I said, it was going to be a two-part podcast of facts into your head, and the sort of the aim for me is to speak about it coherently. Also remember the basic things. So a molecule which I thought, oh, I've got to know that one. It's lycopene. Lycopene, L-Y-C-O-P-E-N-E, is the red colouring of tomatoes. And I had read a CRISPR article about how they've been able to get control by this gene increase the red content of tomatoes, and its red component hasn't got certain values that I weren't quite sure. So I thought I'd go red. It'll have to be an interesting molecule, probably an aromatic molecule, because most molecules which are dyes have rings of carbon. In fact, most small structurally important molecules like sugars or bases or like caffeines or neurotransmitters, they normally have a ring of bonds, and this ring of bonds comes with double bonds, and the double bonds become splinting electrons, and those splinting electrons have two effects. One, it stops acts as a splinter of the molecule, stops it waggling about, and the other effect is that this delocalized bond allows, it's like a conducting, it's an organic conductor. It's almost like making your bond a little bit like making a fake metal. And what do you do with a fake metal? Well, you make it into an antenna, and an antenna absorbs and emits light. So all the interesting optical properties of molecules come in. So being red, being important, is very interesting. Opened up, have a look at lipocine, and it's C40, 40 carbon atoms. Wow. But there's not a ring. It's just one linear molecule, which has got lots of delocalized electrons, lots of double bonds in it. So it's got the splinting, so it's a rigid stick molecule. So this is lipocine, so this is the red of tomatoes. Very important, this is the thing which gives the antioxidant value. I wouldn't be surprised if something's very similar to a red wine. It's the antioxidant thing. And why it's antioxidant is it's got all those double bonds there. So if, look, your free radicals are there, you're not going to do it. But what happens is the free radicals says, do you know, yeah, oh, this has got double bonds in it, I'll dig into it. So we've got 40 carbons. How does it go along? And it's sort of got symmetry all over it. Yeah, pretty amazing stuff. And so you've got a spine of 32 carbons down the spine. So it's just a long strip of carbon. So let's go. Carbon has six protons, therefore six electrons, two in electrons in its it would be K shell or inner shell, and then four in the outer shell, allowing it to form four bonds, that's covalent bonds, where it shares electron each with covalent bond, and therefore have a complete outer shell of eight with two pairs of four electrons each forming a bond. Now that's one way of looking at it. You can also form double bonds with it, so you can actually form a double bond. So a single bond is through the axis, it can rotate. A double bond, the electrons form a splint, and if you line these splints up, you the electrons can travel up and down these splints, and this splinted molecule acts as a little tiny little bit of wire, like the mobile phone antenna, and absorbs the light and transmutes the light energy into vibrational energy, i.e. you show a red light at a tomato, the tomato absorbs red light over a really, yeah, so it's, light of hell. It absorbs all the other light. So a tomato is a broadband absorber. So tomatoes are red because they don't absorb red light. Try to get that in your head. they absorb blue light. So you shine blue light on a red tomato, on a blue background, it will look black. Yeah, because it's absorbed it. Right? You shine, look, shine light on a black kettle, it's black. If you shine blue light on a red tomato, it also looks black. So, the entire thing is that this long line of carbons absorbs, that's the line one, absorbs all light except the red and infrared. It doesn't absorb. So, tomatoes absorb blue light, reflect red light, so it's a red colouring. But it's also, you know, intensely interesting. So as I said before, there's 40 carbon atoms, 30 down the side chain, most of that 32, I think up around 22 bonds, if you add up in that linear spine, are involved in double bonds. In chemistry, we say one's a double bond, the next one's a single bond. Really, it's 2 1.5 bonds. There's no separation. So it forms a sort of a weak pi bond, as it's called, or splint bond, all the way up this nice linear molecule. There's something to do. Go on the internet. Go for lycopene, L-Y-C-O-P-E-N-E. I'm just trying to remember it. And this is the big feat. I'm sort of looking at it and saying, you've got to remember it. So if you try and remember something and just write it down and check it, you forget it. But if you know you're going out with 3 kilograms of weights in the middle of the night, you're going to podcast about it, you better get it straight. And so what do you do with those 8? You've got 32 carbon atoms in the spine. You've got 8 others. Well, what happens is that you add those carbon atoms, put hydrogens, remember that carbon atom has got 4 bonds, so you just fill up those 3 bonds with 3 of the 4 bonds with hydrogen and leave another bond for it to bond to this long chain. So you can imagine it like a tug of war, and you've got 4 carbons which you're going to pull left and right on it. That's the thing about left and right. And these carbons can grab 4 things each. And so they grab 3 hydrogens, and then they hook onto the molecule. Now, how does that hook onto? Well, this is an interesting thing. Just get ready for it. So the first carbon, you can't hook onto that, because if you hooked onto that, you just make it a longer chain. Okay. So you imagine you've got a charm bracelet, and you put a charm on the very end link. Well, that just looks as though it's a longer bracelet with a charm at the end. So, indeed, the carbons, these are methyl groups. Methyl's the term for a carbon with 3 hydrogens on it. Those methyl groups are hooked onto, wait for it, 2. Then there's 4 carbons. 6. So okay, there's 1 to 32 carbons. So it's 2, 6, 10, 14. Then, in the very center, wait for it, it jumps 5 carbons. So that's about 14, 5, 19, add 4, 23, 27, and 31. Of course, the 32nd one is just out there. So that's the straight thing. So it's immediately got symmetry. And the entire thing is chock-a-block full of double bonds, except for there's a double one on the first, 1 to 2, 2 to 3. Now, the fourth and fifth carbon, and the respective ones counting back. I just hope you can do it mentally. I can't quite do maths in my head. Guys, I'm the person doing the recovery here, and you can actually look it up on YouTube. Those ones are not, don't have double bonds, they have extra hydrogens on it. So, the fourth and fifth carbon have not one hydrogen, but two. All the other carbons in the chain have one, except for threes on the terminals. Threes on the terminals, one on everything else, unless it's got a methyl group on it, or the four and five, and counting back from 32 would be 28 and 27. Yeah, it doesn't quite make sense because I said 27, probably 28 and 29, maybe. Going back up to memorize it completely. Now, let's have a look at this little baby. It's got a huge, long beta or carotene. Sorry, it's a lycosine. Now, if you add a methyl group on the end of that, you get not a methyl group. If you put a loop on the end of this lycopene, you put a few extra carbons and make a little ring on the end of each, the 1 and the 32, you'll make carotene, beta carotene, carotene. Now, the carot is not as absorbent of all wavelengths. In fact, there are some red wavelengths it doesn't like. So it absorbs blue wavelengths. It stops absorbing yellow. So it gives out yellow and red things. It absorbs the green, it absorbs the blue, and that's why carrots are red. And it is involved in vitamin A. Now, it's quite an interesting molecule to look at. There's no oxygen in it. With no oxygen, there's no hydrogen bonds. And so, I would say that this is from chemistry, looking at it, that if you boil your tomatoes, if it still looks red, well, therefore you haven't destroyed the lycoprene. You haven't dissolved it. Now, the interesting thing is that we start to understand a little bit about the chemistry of it. Because it's non-polar, it will stain into your plastic ware. You do find that if you if you boil up something tomato-y in a piece of plastic ware, it gets discoloured. Now, you should be able to oxidise that, because this is something which is easily oxidised. So anything with a little bleach, yeah, get some toilet bleach, and you'll clean out your off-coloured kitchen utensils. So if your kitchen utensils turn sort of an orangey or reddy colour, you can clean it. Just whack a bit of toilet bleach in it. Don't tell your mum. Or laundry bleach or navy sand, something which has great oxidants. But my other cooling kit, there's police rescue going out tonight. Let's hope. No, they're not. So I don't like, there's cliffs all around here, so the police have got their work cap out. Now it's interesting they've got their side light on here. Okay, so the other thing, so if you can imagine, if I want to do this molecule for you, it's a stick. Now the police are really looking around the place. What they're looking for? There's a stick. What are they doing? Okay, it's a stick. and it's got these eight extra carbons. It's got a set of one, then four fours. Yep. A five, four fours, and a one. Let's see if that adds up to me in head. So four fours, 16 and 16. Nah. I've got that incorrect already. To get 32, I've got to get up to 32 and 8. But that's I've gone through and counted it a number of times. And you can really understand this molecule, really looking at it. And it's got only four atoms. We've got eight atoms with, what is it? What are the cops looking for? There's some cops up there doing something. They're picking up a box or something. What the heck are they doing? So this molecule is quite interesting. The other thing is, because it's got no hydroxy groups, so the sugar is just carbohydrates. It's got water molecules in it, so it's sort of completely water soluble. But this one has got no hydroxy groups, it's not water soluble. So I would say, if you want to keep your carrots, because the chemistry would suggest that the carotene is fat soluble. So, I would say, I'm not sure, but, I would possibly saute your carrots in a little bit of butter, not a lot of butter, a little bit of butter, because you need fat anyway, and then you can boil it to soften it up. You want to, there's cellulose in there, and you want to break down the cellulose. What it is, I suppose, must be cellulose. It's plant cells. Made it soft, but if you want to absorb, and of course that's done in spaghetti bolognese. You've got meat fat, and gets in that beautiful sauce, tasting sauce. Now, the other really interesting thing is, it's called the Maillard, Maillard reaction. I'm beginning to hear a spell of it. A lot better, because I'm doing so many hours of spelling rehab a day. That's also another very interesting chemical reaction. I don't quite understand it. So it gets the amine group of your amino acid reacts with basically the hydroxy group of your sugar. So your sugar is a self-ether rings. The ether's got an oxygen in it. So these are oxygen rings. And what happens is your amino acid reacts with your sugar and reacts there. Now this is an interesting thing, because just reading through the old recipe books, they do say with your to caramelize the onion, this is the Maillard's reactions, and to caramelize your I think I might produce absolutely disgusting things food, but just chemistry wise it's interesting. You get Maillard's reaction and you get this caramelization. Now the thing is that caramelization makes it taste sweeter. But I think what it does is it moves the sugars that you're going to eat anyway onto the amino acids, so that you can taste it. Now, of course, humans, which are meat eaters and fruit eaters, taste sweet, but they taste sweet flavours, whereas animals, or like cats, can't taste sweet. So we have specialized sweet receptors a sweet tooth, and it's a special receptor of our own to taste it up. So it's the Maillard's reaction. So my tips from looking at the molecules of the red of tomatoes: excellent antioxidant. I can't really see how antioxidant can survive in your stomach and get throughout your body. I can't see how that is. I can see how it's like the most fantastic antioxidant, and you should be able to do something like this: pour some bleach onto a bit of tomato, and would it go white or would it go black? No, it would go, it wouldn't, it would stop absorbing blue light, it would go white. I think if you got some tomato, I'll have to do that some stage. Or it would go colourless, I suppose. I think that's what, oh, there's an evil moggy. I must admit, I hate cats. Look, I like cats indoors, but not wild cats. And they often become diseased, quite crazy, out here, and they grow to monster size. And, I won't go on it, but, they're the, I don't think, indigenous people are into as much hunting as they used to be. They definitely knock off the cats, which is a pretty thing, and they're not as deranged. In fact, all of the feral pests get quite pest-ridden, whereas our actual native animals don't appear to have very much whatever it is, all the parasites and stuff like that. So I'm just going off the beat here. So my observation about carotene, lycopene, is what a fantastic molecule. It's like, what is the minimum number of molecules, what's the minimum way that I can absorb red, blue light? Like, still it's a minimum way of doing it, and it's full of antioxidants, so you know, it seems pretty, so if you remove hydrogens off it and let it oxidize, it's like it's burning your fuel. It's a pretty high fuel stuff. Why plants would evolve it? Colouring, obviously red to attract primates like ourselves, I think, and birds. So it's colouring, that's why it's red. And again, this thing is part of the photosynthesis. So I have to look at it. So this molecule is basically the minimum number of molecules you need to absorb it. So it's been made, it's in that kit. I don't know whether something with so many bonds would, I would expect it would be antibacterial or antimicrobial, in terms of something which is so the opposite of oxidizing. Can oxidize it. Oxidizing kills the plant itself. But something like that, something Del Bonson, it's a really interesting dye to get to. So my little advice is that if you want to absorb this antioxidant, you have to dissolve it in a little bit of fat, i.e. if you've got any fat, all the red should go to it. So this is interesting, so it's worth while doing a few sort of experiments with it. And so if you've got a tomato stain, bleach, that's a weak bleach solution should clean it up, which is different from the red stains you get from sort of pyrene chains which unfold when you get bilirubin and bilirubin when you actually produce blood and blood stains. So I should go into blood stains. That's about all I want to say for tonight. People are working away on this intersection, and I must admit, this modification of this intersection is actually a work of urban art to come through. So I'm going to finish my podcast now. Here you had Vladivostok and the other one. I'll see how well this is recorded.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. How you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.